Good morning. You're in tune with What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Bob Hinkle, Fred Mills, and Justin Farrar. Today, we've got a lively topic. We're talking about some of the music industry's most colorful personalities, managers, agents, all sorts of characters larger than life.
Well, and also, we should include artists in that as well. As the manager of the Jay Giles Band, and not being larger than life, just struggling to, you know, fit into my own life, but nonetheless, as the manager, there were some peculiar things that those guys did that were, I think, fairly unique. They didn't like the press. They didn't want to do any press. They wanted anything to do with it. They wouldn't do interviews, except once in a great while. And I was always carefully instructed at the beginning of the interview that if the word broccoli came up in the conversation, that meant pay attention, don't go anywhere, because we may want to leave here. And if the phrase Bob from Montreal came up any time after that, then that meant get us out of here right now. It's going badly. We don't like it. We have to leave. That was basically Pete Wolf's thing. And Wolf's a guy who...
He did some writing, didn't he?
He did. Oh, yeah, he did some writing. Well, he and Seth Justman were basically the songwriters.
And he was a DJ.
And he was Wolf a Goof, a Mama Tufa with the green teeth on WBCN in Boston. Yes, yeah. He was. He did about 600 sit-ups a day. No one ever knew when he slept. I never saw him... sleep. I never saw him sleepy. He was about as big around as this microphone here at his waist. He was an unbelievable character.
So if he's in an interview and he refers to hanging out with Bob from Montreal years ago, you know it's time that...
I have to shut it down immediately.
Okay. What would you do? Like, would you run some type of subterfuge, or were you just straight up saying this has to end?
No, I'd just say, guys, I'm sorry, I forgot we have this appointment, you know, down at the laundromat or something. And we'd all have to rush out as quickly as possible. On the other hand, Harry Chapin was somebody who was a character in his own right. When he was into his world hunger thing, you could ask Harry anything you wanted to ask him. You could ask him about the weather. You could ask him about his next album. You could ask him about his family, and he would answer you in terms of world hunger. He would find a way to turn it all completely around and answer you in terms of world hunger. He was unbelievable. He was relentless.
I remember seeing Harry Chapin at Memorial Hall in Chapel Hill back in the mid or late 70s. Mm-hmm. And he seemed to have an interesting way of engaging the audience that was, he just radiated charisma in a way that was hard to define. It was an intensity, I think, that comes through in what you're outlining.
Yeah, I would say, well, his brother Steve, who was his keyboard player and producer, would say that Harry was a bully with the audience, and he kind of was. He would kind of get the audience going wherever he wanted them to go. Mm-hmm. He had songs that he would get the audience to rewrite the ending of every time, with every show. It would never end the same way twice. But it would be world hunger. It got to the point where we'd have to sit him down and say, Harry, you're not a politician yet. Your world is revolving around world hunger, and your career chips are floating out the window. And he wouldn't care. He'd answer us in terms of world hunger.
Now, Bob, I know you've worked with a lot of artists. One of my favorites is Etta James, and I was going to ask you not specifically about her, but what's the most outrageous or unusual thing that's ever been demanded of you that you had to take care of, fire to put out or situation to control, or what comes to mind?
Well, there's a couple, one of which does happen to have to do with Etta, who called me at one point and wanted, in the height of her Nasty Blues stage, she wanted me to go and find Little Richard and set up a gospel tour with Etta James and Little Richard, which, oddly enough, after I got over the fear of having to, you know, deal with that, I thought, my God, I would go see this tour. This would be fantastic. But it was weird. It was a strange little time period in there.
Yeah.
And I couldn't quite put it together, although it was close. Otherwise, just before the Giles Band went on tour with the Stones in Europe, I finally talked them into doing one television show, which was the Joe Franklin Show, if anybody. It's a syndicated show out of New York, and he calls himself the King of Television.
Oh, yeah,
At that point, he was about 60. He was about a year away from retirement. He thought he knew everything about everything, and kindly, he didn't quite.
I think you can find YouTube clips of him now.
I'm sure you can. And the Giles Band decided that they wanted to go on the Joe Franklin Show and indeed own the Joe Franklin Show for a night. So I had to go negotiate with a guy who thinks he's the king of television, who's really not the king of television, but I have to negotiate with him as though he is. the punchline of the story was they were going to recreate the freeze frame video on the show, and they Joe Franklin walked in and said, "Don't worry, guys, I'll have my people go get the paint," which he did. He has, because the freeze frame video ends with people pouring paint from a high altitude on the Giles Band, who was in a pyramid. Right?
I remember that video, yeah.
So they got the paint. They recreated the video. Turns out that Joe Franklin had bought oil-based paint. So they were pouring oil-based paint. And this was a live audience of 300 music business, you know, everybody from Jan Wenner on down was in the audience. And the Giles Band had to spend the next 3 weeks in the shower with kerosene and stuff, getting to the point where they could then go on tour with the Stones.
You know, that's why I never went into artist management myself, I think. I'm safe behind my typewriter in my little office.
There is no safe place in this business.
Well, you know, the music industry, there's an old joke that a guy walks into a career counselor's office, sits down, and says, "Well, tell me a little about yourself." And he says, "Well, I'm neurotic, dysfunctional, and I can't sleep at night." And he immediately says, "You know, go into music business." Because it tends to attract its share of eccentrics and dysfunctional people and otherwise extroverted personalities. A lot of introverts, but the extroverts are the ones that you read about.
Yep.
Whether it be the musicians themselves or the people behind the scenes.
Yeah. and yet there are those unsung crazy people too who are in the mix. On that same tour of Europe with the Stones, it was a tour of 80 where all the dates were in soccer stadiums and they all started at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was a hot summer, meant the Giles Band was playing in, you know, hot European heat. They were losing 3 or 4 pounds every show, so they come back into the dressing room and their clothes were starting, this fabulous clothes that they got before they left the States weren't fitting them anymore. So one of the roadies volunteered to go to cooking school, just to leave the tour for a little while, went to cooking school, and came back, like, just a few days later, a master chef of about 7 or 8 dishes that he fed everybody on for the rest of the tour. It was totally voluntary. You know, he didn't have to go do it. He was a hero.
No green M&Ms, though.
No. No, the only thing about Wolf was that he had, because Love Stinks was one of their songs, obviously, he had to have 24 thornless red roses with every show, but for a logical reason, he would beat them on the stage and then throw them into the audience.
Okay.
Well, in the radio world, there's plenty of colorful characters. We often talk in the hallway here at WNCW about how it would make a great television show to sort of parallel what happens with all of the folks off microphone here, because it's really a lot better than WKRP, I can guarantee. But thinking back in time, does anybody remember the Black Pope?
Mm-mm.
Okay, the Black Pope was this sort of itinerant radio DJ who would travel around radio stations in the South, and I don't remember exactly what time frame he was, but basically he would come into a station that was flagging in ratings and boost things, and his whole bit was, it's hilarious, I'll have to play some of it alongside this segment, but he comes in and he disrespects all you other DJs out there, all you other DJs, you're nothing. I am a human radio station. And he had this whole spiel, and he would just self-aggrandize the whole time. It's hilarious. And he would boost the ratings, and eventually people would get tired of him, and he would move on to another station.
Well, I mean, long before the era of shock jocks, I mean, the whole AM radio DJ was, you know, louder, faster, now, you know, the guy with the speed rap down and could rattle off, you know, 10 commercials in between, you know, music segments and you know, with the patois and the rhyming scheme, I mean, he's almost like a proto-rapper, these DJs, and they were very outsized personalities. I mean, you know, this was the guy that could go down to a local car dealership and draw thousands of people purely because, you know, he's this radio personality that everybody's hanging on to his words and everything. Again, some of these guys were pretty dysfunctional. Murray the K, the fifth Beatle, got involved with payola and everything. So some of these people, you got to have an ego to kind of go with the person, the character, I think.
In Jamaican culture, obviously the cult of the DJ is quite extreme. Even if it's a DJ who just plays a all-night party or something like that, all-weekend party, one of the big things is you don't even ask him what he's playing. That's an insult. And often when they got 45s from the small labels, they would scratch off the credits so that no one knew what they were playing because they wanted to be the only one playing that particular song.
A lot of competition and everything. And that's always been way from radio DJs to sound system DJs, and then certainly with the advent of hip-hop. I mean, that was there again, the bigger the personality, the bigger the show. You mentioned Kara P. I wonder who would be the Venus character around here, Joe?
I think we're looking at him.
Yeah. Well, then who would play Lonnie Anderson?
Yeah, that's what we lack here.
Yeah.
That's what we've talked about in this conversation that we could make entertainment out of WNCW, is that we lack any sort of office romance angle. That's one
thing. Well,
Lonnie's
that's not
missing.
Doing a lot in Hollywood these days. He could probably hire as a receptionist or something.
What do you think? Email us what it is at wncw.org. Your knowledge of and perhaps interaction with larger-than-life personalities in music, radio, etc. For WNCW, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Bob Hinkle, Fred Mills, Justin Farrar. Until next time.